This is Mark Langdon's Bets Club.
Hello and a warm welcome back to Mark Langdon's Bets Club. Jack Reeve back in the hot seat after a strong showing from Bruce Millington in recent weeks. Of course, joined by the man himself, Mark Langdon, to guide you through things. Mark, I've been off for a couple of weeks, and in that time, you've been banging in winners left, right and centre. I'm starting to think it might be something about me.
Yeah, well, is that just your way of saying, Jack, that you just want to go back to Dubai or wherever it was that you was playing golf, hitting holes in one? No, it was good. It was good one last week. I was travelling back from the Spurs game, and initially it was given that the first goal was given to Buendia, wasn't it? So I didn't even realise that Konsa had scored. And then he then got the second. It was only sort of then that I realised he'd been credited with the first as well. But it is lovely when a plan comes together. We spoke last week about Leicester's inability to deal with set pieces. I'm just glad, really, that I'd played it a little bit safer and didn't just have one centre-back riding for me, because that would have been gutting if you kind of get it right but then only sort of go for Mings. But I was travelling back from watching the mighty Spurs do your boys over 3-0.
I mean, that must have been a joyous day. And I'm so glad the goal scorer tips landed for you, Mark, because it feels as if you've hit the woodwork on multiple occasions since we've been doing this podcast with those.
Yeah, absolutely. And if we let the listener in behind the curtain, if you remember, we did a trial run where I tipped Son to score first against Manchester City and it never saw the light of day. There have been some frustrating moments since then, but it was good to get one over the line. For sure.
Absolutely. No, great stuff. And hopefully lots of our listeners followed you in on that one. Let's jump straight into things then. And let's start with the Champions League. We had a joyous couple of nights of Champions League action. It's always a welcome Tuesday and Wednesday when it's on these cold winter nights. Where would you like to start, Mark? Because lots went on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I suppose really, Jack, just with the outright betting, we know 15 of the 16 runners. We're speaking before Atalanta against Villarreal on Thursday evening. But, you know, just that sort of the domination, I suppose, really, in terms of the English teams, three in the top five in the betting, with Man City at 3-1, Bayern at 4, 11-2 Liverpool, 7 Paris, 9 Chelsea, 14 Manchester United, 16 Real Madrid, 18 Ajax, 33 Juventus and Atletico. Atletico sneak their way in truly Atletico fashion, really, with some dark art, shall we say, against Porto to get through to the last 16. And it shows the quality, really, of team and calibre that's left in the Inter of 50s, and it's sort of any price you like. The rest of those, I think Chelsea's probably the most interesting place to start, Jack, because you know, really have blown an opportunity to get you don't know you're going to get an easier draw in the last 16, but it certainly gives you a better chance if you win your group. And to concede that last minute goal against Zenit was, you know, could turn out to be a big blow, particularly if they sort of end up with Bayern in the last 16. I mean, you wouldn't want that, would you? Been a couple of moments now from Thomas Tuchel's team that maybe just gone off the boil a little bit. They conceded three for two games in a row, lost at West Ham, been dropping points in the Premier League as well. I mean, you could nearly always rely on them defensively. Just the last couple of matches that has sort of disappeared. And I know one of the goals from Zenit was absolute peach, wasn't it? That sort of the last equaliser. But Zenit missed some chances as well in that game. So you can't say it's a crisis or anything like that, but just some momentary wobbles, really, from Chelsea that could cost them both in Europe and also domestically.
Yeah, Chelsea certainly not looking in the fine shape they were a few weeks ago. Mark, we had a question in on Twitter from Rab, and he said the big teams seem to be getting bigger. Looks like only five or six teams can win the Champions League from now on. You mentioned earlier, Mark, about the dominance almost of the English teams this time around. Do you think that's a fair question from Rab to say that, you know, that the only five or six teams are possible to win it now?
Well, I mean, first of all, five or six teams, it still makes it pretty interesting, isn't it? I mean, you know, most people would say there's only five or six teams that can win the FA Cup. There's probably not even five or six teams you know, realistically, that can win the Premier League. I think there is a feeling of sort of dominance from certain teams, and that the big teams are getting bigger. There's no doubt about that. You know, the Premier League, a few years ago, it kind of had all the gear but no idea, didn't it? Really, you know, and it's been they had the financial power, but the managers weren't there. Now you look at Guardiola and Klopp and Thomas Tuchel and Ralph Rangnick and Antonio Conte. You even go sort of down the list, and you know, Arsenal and Benitez and Bielsa, you know, teams that are managers that really. You would, I think, are good enough to be managing at the top end of leagues. Just happy to be part of the Premier League, really, and just, you know, be with a team. So I think that's where the big changes happen. But it wasn't that long ago that there was this Spanish dominance of the Champions League. Real Madrid and Barcelona were, you know, felt like they were going to win the Champions League forever. Before that, the Italian teams had their spell. I hope that it's just, you know, it's just part of a cycle, and that, you know, soon enough other leagues will, you know, sort of catch up or become stronger, because these things don't tend to last forever. I do wonder and worry, though, because, you know, you have got this potential, I think, for the Premier League to kind of grow into a real dominant force and just sort of knock the rest out of the water. And there was sort of talk from a team in Germany about how a newly promoted team just up from the Championship had outbid them for a player. And this, I think it was like Leverkusen, might even have been Rashica that went to Norwich. So we're not even talking about, you know, like sort of the big Premier League teams that have got this financial advantage at the moment.
Norwich are a big team, Mark.
Yeah, big in Norfolk. But it's, you know, but you've got like Juventus and Atletico at 33-1 to win the Champions League, which does feel like that they're, you know, that doesn't feel right in some respects. No. I think what Rav's saying there, but I think it's up to the others to recruit smarter. You know, if the Premier League teams are going for the absolute best players, then maybe you need to sort of look at the next level and coach them and get them better, you know? And if you look at sort of Atletico's transfer dealings, they haven't really done that, have they? Griezmann, Suarez, you know, they're trying to kind of get the best out of players maybe that maybe had their best days. Or, you know, Juventus spent all of their money on Cristiano Ronaldo to the detriment of the rest of the team. And then when they were looking to appoint a new coach, you know, because it didn't work out for Pirlo, they've ended up going for Allegri, who I'm not sure is the most forward-thinking of managers. So I think that sort of some of them big teams have made a lot of mistakes, Barcelona being the most obvious example, and now they find themselves in the Europa League. I mean, Bayern Munich are able to keep pace, aren't they? And, you know, they've not got, you know, sort of oil money sort of coming in. They do it with really smart recruitment, aggressive recruitment as well, you know, taking the best players from the rest of the Bundesliga, which is maybe a separate argument, but, you know, they're able to compete. And so I don't see any reason why Juventus should not be in that kind of position, you know, or an Inter. So I tend to think that they will catch up, because history has shown that there's not this sort of domination for a long period of time.
And we always love to hear what our listeners are thinking. Now, we run a Twitter poll. You can vote in future weeks if you follow us at Racing Post Sport or Mark's personal account at Mark Langdon. Who's going to win the Champions League, we asked. Liverpool coming out on top with 43% of the vote. Bayern Munich were second favourites by your reckoning, 35%. Manchester City, 17%. PSG with a lowly 4%. Mark, just how impressed have you been with Liverpool? I think it took a few people by surprise just how strong Klopp's side were in their victory against Milan on Tuesday. But he's got history for this.
Yeah, he has. Yeah, I mean, he loves moaning about fixture congestion and how much his players play. And then when his team have already qualified and won the group, he still sends out the big hitters. He may be... hasn't got reason to complain. I assume he thinks, well, Mane and Salah are going away for AFCON soon. So, you know, who cares, really? We'll run them into the ground before then. I think he probably wanted to just keep the winning mentality going. as well. I think they've been fantastic. That it was a hard group. People are now trying to rewrite history and say that it wasn't a hard group. It was. Porto are a decent team. Atletico are Atletico and are always going to be tough. Milan are not as good as they were, but they still finish in the top four in Italy. They're in the title race this year. You know, that wasn't a team that you wanted to sort of pick out as being the weakest ones. You know, if you look at like a Malmo or something like that, that were in Chelsea's group. So it was a difficult group. Liverpool made it look easy. They started fantastically well and just never stopped, really. They had one sort of bad 45 minutes, I suppose, at the Wanda Metropolitano when they were on the ropes against Atletico and the Griezmann red card changed the dynamic of that game. But apart from that, they've been brilliant, really. And they have in the Premier League as well, you know, a lot of attacking play. Question is, were we sleeping on them at the start? You know, they had a bad year last year. They were my tip at the start to win the Champions League. And I hate it when people go, and I'm going to stick with them, because that infuriates me. Because I think it's really poor to just say that without reason. So I'm going to say I fancy them now, probably even more than I did at the start of the campaign. They've won a really difficult group. They've got all of their key players fit at the moment. I think we've seen the reserve players come in and do well when required. They look back to their levels of a couple of years ago. And so that gives them a big old opportunity. I think Bayern are an absolute class act. Just worry about them defensively. You know, Dortmund scored a couple of goals against them last weekend and probably should have had more. And at the very sort of top level, when we're talking about the semi-finals, that would concern me, I think. I'd be more trusting in Liverpool and even Man City and Chelsea's defence than Bayern right at the top end.
And another team in wonderful form at the moment, Mark, are Ajax. Now, they're around about 20-1. And David asks on Twitter, Ajax must come into the reckoning at that price, the most informed team in Europe. Do you agree with David?
I think that they're a really interesting team. They are sort of absolutely blowing the doors away in the Eredivisie and have done so in the Champions League. My concern is that they are so dominant in the Eredivisie, it's difficult to know like what that level is, because it doesn't transfer across very well to, we know that it doesn't transfer very well across from just even some of the players that come to, say, Britain on where they are. The Champions League results were impressive, particularly Dortmund at home. Dortmund away, though, they were losing that game when Hummels got an absolute joke of a red card, and Dortmund that also had injuries as well. So I've just got question marks. I think they've got a fantastic coach in Erik ten Hag, some brilliant sort of younger players, many suggesting that it's maybe even better than that 2019 team that they had that reached the semi-finals. What I would say is that I think they're going to need to be better, because I think that the level has been raised by the top teams around Europe. So look, at 20-1, they might give you a good run. And, you know, Tom has asked, are there any back-to-lay opportunities on a bigger price, or do you think the gap with the English free and buying is just too big to make a long shot worthwhile? I think the obvious answer, if you are going for a long shot, is Ajax, because we don't know. They've definitely not hit the top of their potential yet. And, you know, they have dazzled. And I think that Ten Hag is a coach that, you know, could easily manage sort of Man City, Bayern, Liverpool, Paris in the future with absolutely no problem. I just look at them and think, do I really see them beating Man City or Bayern or Liverpool, even Paris or Chelsea? I don't think I do. So if you were looking for a long shot, the one that sort of stood out to me at just a couple of points shorter were Real Madrid at 16s. Only because, you know, they've won their group like Ajax have. And so you are guaranteed, or in theory, you've got an easier draw into the the next stage. And Vinicius is playing so well at the moment. They've got Benzema and they've got that three that's played for about 20 years together. And, you know, they've got an outstanding goalkeeper in Courtois. I think Alaba has improved them defensively. So I think if I was looking for a long shot, it would probably be more Real Madrid than some of the others. But I kind of what Tom alluded to there about, you know, the front four in the market just being sort of front four or five in the market just being too good. I think they probably are.
There we go. We haven't mentioned too much of Manchester United. We'll get on to them after this. That's the Champions League sorted. Let's get on to our match of the day. 5:30 kickoff on Saturday. Norwich City against Manchester United. I promised the listeners this had nothing to do with me. Mark, Manchester United, a really interesting case here. I'm the new management now, Ralph Rangnick. They travel to Carrow Road on Saturday evening. A short price, 1-2, Norwich 13-2, the draw 18-5. Of course, both of these clubs under new management. How do we think this was going to play out?
Yeah, so I chose this game. I mean, first of all, there's not a great batch of live matches, it has to be said, this weekend. So I don't know if they've kept them apart. They knew the F1 was going to be so exciting and that was going to take a lot of the focus. But so I went for this game, because I saw Norwich last week live, and I always think that helps if you can sort of get a handle on a team. And then I think that Rangnick is really interesting. I wouldn't read too much into the game against Young Boys. Clearly, he was experimenting. You saw some unusual names sort of make an appearance, Charlie Savage being one and Tom Heaton being another at sort of different ends of their playing careers. But I think we saw more in the game against Crystal Palace. Now, it was only a 1-0 win, and you have got to be wary, I suppose, of any kind of confirmation bias that comes out of that. But there's no doubt in my mind that there was more control and more of a plan to the way that United were playing against Crystal Palace. You know, it's that box midfield, two sitters, two number 10s. I think playing two up front enabled them to sustain attacks as well. Sort of, you know, that's been an accusation, hasn't it, that, you know, where Cristiano Ronaldo can't get around the pitch like he used to, it was too easy to play out. But with sort of somebody, whether it be Rashford or Greenwood up front alongside him, you know, that does help. You're getting your best players, sort of, you think Sancho and Fernandes into the same team. It was something that Carrick and Solskjaer both struggled with, really, how to do that. So he's already found a system. I think defensively, we saw an improvement. They only gave up 0.9 XG against, which was their second best defensive showing since mid-September in the Premier League. Crystal Palace were only allowed two shots on target. And I think we've seen, like, the counter-attack just be controlled under Rangnick. And that was one of the many issues that they had previously. So I don't think it's that difficult a job to make Manchester United quite a bit better in the short term. Long term becomes a different argument, because I still think that there are issues. I mean, you know, some of the decisions they've made in the last couple of years, just baffling, really, to the point where they employed a set piece coach, and they're the only team in the Premier League not to have scored a goal from a set piece this season, which maybe goes to some of the choices that they've made, you know, behind the scenes. And, you know, they wanted a director of football, and then they ended up kind of giving, like, Darren Fletcher a job. And, you know, it did feel a bit sort of jobs for the boys. And I'm not saying that sort of they're all undeserved, but there are a few just odd decisions, I think, that were made off the pitch. Rangnick coming in just isn't one of those. And like I say, because of the talent in the team, I don't think it takes much to really step them up. I did see Norwich 3-0 defeat against Spurs. I felt that the 3-0 was harsh, as Dean Smith alluded to after the game. But the quality, particularly in both boxes, or lack of quality, Jack, you know, I'm sure you agree, was evident, really, from Norwich. Defensive sort of not great. And then attacking-wise, the chances did come their way. They snatched at them and didn't really look that convincing. Quite nice and pretty in midfield, I felt, you know, in possession. Brandon Williams, one of probably the best players on the day for Norwich, you know, won't be able to play against his parent club. So I think it's probably going to be a United win. What have you made of Smith's start at Norwich?
I've been pleased. I was disappointed against you boys. We were missing Matthias Norman, and we were missing Milo Rashica, who have been two of Norwich's best players this season. So that was a shame. But as you said, Mark, I think that we had chances in that game, and they fell to Pukki and Josh Sargent. I mean, Pukki's been good this season. I think he's scored 5 goals, which is a decent return. He scored 70% of Norwich City's goals, which is the is the biggest kind of percentage of goals scored for a club in the Premier League. So our reliance on him has to change. Josh Sargent's been an incredibly poor signing. He just doesn't look cut out for the Premier League. But as you say, we've become far more organised under Dean Smith, but you can only work with what you've got. And unfortunately, until January, where we may or may not make new signings, at this current moment in time, it does seem we lack a bit of quality, particularly in the attacking areas when Milo Rashica is out. Just another point on Manchester United. You mentioned there it was nice to see some fresh names in the side. A mention for Zidane Iqbal, who became the first British Asian footballer for Manchester United. So a massive evening for him. And just on Manchester United's run of fixtures, Mark: Norwich, Brentford, Brighton, Newcastle, Burnley, Wolves, Villa, West Ham, Burnley, Southampton, Leeds, Watford. This is the perfect time for Rangnick to come in, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Almost as if they'd... I wonder if they had thought about that, you know, when they saw those fixtures. I don't think that United had the foresight. I don't think they had it in them, really. I think the Watford game was just so embarrassing that they just had to make that decision. If they lost 2-1, I mean, it wouldn't be that much of a surprise if Ollie was still there. It's a big opportunity, you know. I do think that they are... I mean, I was against them in terms of the top four race, you know, even up to the last couple of weeks. But they've got the potential to quickly sort of eat up the ground there, just because I think they were so poorly managed previously. For this game, I actually felt that 1-2 didn't feel like that wrong a price to me for United. I thought it was pretty fair enough. Norwich are averaging only 2.73 shots on target per game. So I'm just not sure that they've got the defence to keep United out, and I'm pretty sure they haven't got the attack to do too much damage either.
Yeah, big few months for Manchester United. Let's get through the rest of the Premier League fixtures. Let's start with the Friday night fixture, Brentford against Watford. A big game to kick things off, Mark, when we're thinking about the bottom end of the Premier League table.
It is, yeah. I mean, that's why I thought the draw was probably a big run, and feels like a game where you don't want to lose it. Brentford missing Tony and Kanyos, who played up front in his place. I mean, he's suspended. He was the one I had sort of shortlisted. I didn't realise he was suspended until sort of, you know, the early part of the week, because I think it might have caught a few people by surprise that he played up front and scored against Leeds. So missing two really important players. You could say the same about Watford, with Saar particularly being out until mid-January. Watford have lost three on the spin, but Leicester, Chelsea and City, pretty tough run. I don't think they would have been anticipating too many points. They'll feel like this is more achievable. And Brentford, for all that they get sort of decent plaudits, one win in eight, and the, like I say, missing Tony particularly, would worry me, I think, in terms of backing them.
Things get underway on Saturday. It's Manchester City up against Wolves. Wolves really struggling for goals.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but there's only been two goals in total in their last four games. You know, they are, you know, very tight defensively, but not scoring that many. That's why I was looking at Man City and under 3.5 goals. 12 of Wolves' 15 have been under 2.5. So you've got an extra goal. Now, they don't play Man City every week, so I'm sure those figures would look a little bit different if they did. But I was looking at Wolves' stats. They're ninth for possession, but only three teams have got a worse record in terms of shot creating action. So they're obviously doing some things well in terms of keeping the ball, but that's not actually developing into sort of, you know, really sort of that those shot creating actions, you know, where you are supposed to try to score your goals. So that'll be something, I think, for Bruno Lage to work on. Probably not in this game. You know, Adama Traore is a big weapon against Manchester City, because he just gets his head down and runs, and there's often a lot of space in behind. But I'm pretty sure that Guardiola would have spent all week thinking, how do we stop that? And if he does that, then you would expect City to win the game without thrashing a well-organised Wolves.
Just as Arsenal thought they were up and running, they were brought back down to reality with a bang. They take on Southampton this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned this a few weeks ago. Like, Arsenal were beating some quite bad teams, and so they probably weren't as good as that. they're probably not as bad as the one that's now lost two in a row and people are calling for Arteta's head. It's a it's really strange, really, how that kind of the up and down sort of nature, really, of, I think, particularly Arsenal social media, not the only ones, but it does feel like there's a crisis every time they lose a game. I think there is sort of a question to be had as to whether Arteta is the right person to take them forward. And if you have a look at sort of XG, sort of goal difference per 90 minutes, they're actually 16th in the Premier League, with only Burnley, Newcastle, Watford and Norwich behind them, which I think is probably sort of more concerning than the fact they've just lost a couple of away matches, particularly when, you know, Damari Gray smashes one in. In this game, I was looking at Southampton or draw double chance. I am a little bit concerned by the fact that Caballero probably being goal for Southampton, because they've got the two other keepers both out injured. But I would say that neither of them, Forster and McCarthy, have not impressed me that much in the last few years. So maybe you're not replacing Alisson, are you, or Edison? So it's difficult to just come in from the cold, but hopefully he's up to the task.
We mentioned Chelsea earlier, having a few niggles in recent weeks. A good opportunity to get things back on track with the game against Leeds.
Yeah, particularly with Phillips out for, you know, a while now. That is a big one for them. Was it about 2 months there? Expecting him to be out for, Jack. That one of the most important players in the league, I would say. I know that Bielsa is all about the system and stuff like that, but in my opinion, that makes it really, really difficult. We did have a question in on Chelsea, sort of in terms of the title race, Jack, and just whether we may be at 5-1, they're now a good price to win it. I'm not so sure. I think we've spoken about the fact that City and Liverpool said that coming from Jake, sort of saying that he thinks 5-1 is now an overreaction. I think it's probably about right. I think that the other two I would put ahead of them. I do think they'll win this game, though. In terms of a bet, I was looking at Forshaw to be booked. Yeah, he's obviously been very much injury hit. He's only played 11 or started 11 league matches going back to the beginning of the 2019-2020 season. He's been booked 5 times in those 11 games, and he's 100-30 to be carded against Chelsea, who are going to have a lot of the ball, you would imagine. It's going to be hard work for him, you know, runners off at those midfield positions. So 100-30 looked like a big old price. Only Stuart Dallas averages more tackles for Leeds this season as well.
Liverpool against Aston Villa, the return of Steven Gerrard to Anfield. Mark, they seem to love him at Villa Park already.
I thought you were going to say Anfield. I was going to say, blimey, you know, state the obvious, Jack. Yeah, they do. I mean, he's the kind of character that I think supporters will want to get behind, isn't he? You know, he wears his heart on the sleeve. He's very passionate. Everyone knows he was a brilliant footballer, the way that he dragged Liverpool at times through matches and tournaments and league campaigns. So he has got Villa sort of part buzzing again and believing that sort of better times are ahead. I think he's very positive in his sort of press conferences, but also quite honest and outspoken. And you know, I think that people can get behind him. What I would say for this game is that I think this is, you know, more difficult than Leicester at home and Brighton at home. You know, I was looking at Liverpool and over 2.5 goals in this season. Villa have only failed to score twice this campaign. So even when things were going bad under Dean Smith, they would tend to find a path to goal. They might do so again, or, you know, Liverpool could actually clear the line themselves.
To be fair to Villa, though, Mark, they were good against Manchester City, though.
They were in the second half. I thought that they were well behind at that stage. I felt that they laid the foundations in that second half for the performance against Leicester. But it's a lot easier to play when you're 2-0 down, if that makes sense in some respects. And, you know, on another day, maybe they missed a chance, didn't they, to equalise. But I felt like they deserved to lose that one. They were competitive enough, but it was more, I think, that second half then set them up for what they went on to do against Leicester. They weren't great in the first half against Leicester, having watched the highlights, but much better in the second.
We've already discussed the evening Saturday game between Norwich and Manchester United, so let's head into Sunday, where things kick off. Well, we've got 3 2 o'clock games. Brighton against Tottenham first up. Mark, what's going on with the COVID situation with you?
Yeah,
well, not you personally, but I know no, you're
with
well.
Me, I'm all hopefully all clear and no issues heading into Christmas. But yeah, Spurs have got the training grounds closed. When the training ground has been closed, other Premier League teams, those matches have been off, in the last 18 months or so. So I'd be surprised. We're probably not worth going too in depth in this game. I'd be very surprised if it's on. Tottenham are out to around about 3-1. I mean, I think if you were having a bet, I'd probably go for them, because the only way I see it happening is if they've got sort of enough good players for it to go ahead. Brighton are missing a load of players. I don't think they'll be gutted if it has to be postponed either. So it's probably a no better, isn't it, until we know more.
Yeah, slight worry. I mean, I haven't read too much into the situation. Have they kind of said how it's all suddenly come about?
That they haven't, no. I mean, Ivan Toney had it after the game, didn't it? So he got it, whether it was, having played against Tottenham or Tottenham got it, having played against him. But it seemed to all sort of balloon up from there, really, because Emerson and Brian Hill were both missing the game against Norwich with illness. And so, we don't know how that developed. But even down to the fact that when they were preparing for the game against Rennes, more and more people were getting positive tests. So, according to Antonio Conte, they didn't really have a team to play against Rennes on Thursday. So they're not going to have one to play on Sunday, I wouldn't have thought, unless all of those or a lot of those, turn out to be false positives, which feels unlikely, I suppose, at this stage.
Yeah, not good at all. Let's hope things sort themselves out there sooner rather than later. Burnley against West Ham. Do we have a bet for this one, Mark?
That there'll be claret everywhere. I think it's probably the safest bet of the weekend. The draw, I just felt with West Ham, who were excellent in the second half against Chelsea, that Zouma's injury could be a big one. Not necessarily just because it's Zouma, but because Ogbonna is also out. I spoke with Bruce last week and I said, I don't think Ogbonna is a massive absentee on his own. But I think if you take both centre-halves out of a team, even Liverpool struggle, don't they, if you got two out, or Man City would as well. So that could be a problem for West Ham, but they still are a difficult team to beat. In terms of Burnley, they've only won once, but they have had seven draws. And I just wonder if this is a game, even money, I can pass West Ham over in this fixture, given that Zouma is out alongside Ogbonna, and that there's also been some doubts over the fullbacks as well.
So Burnley with one win, another side with one win, coming against Burnley, Newcastle United, they travel to Leicester. That was a crucial win for Newcastle, Mark. I wasn't sure if it was ever going to come.
They celebrated it like it was the Champions League final. So they're getting their practice in for when all the great players arrive over the next 5 years or so. It was a big one. You just feel like, you get one and then it gives you something to build on, doesn't it? I suppose they were quite nervous towards the end, I think understandably. So I still felt, Leicester 8-11 to win this game, and that felt okay to me. Until you sort of then read that there's quite a bit of COVID knocking around Leicester, who travelled to Napoli for the game on Thursday without sort of seven players. Not all of them, I don't think, COVID related. Some of them just feeling unwell. So you don't know how that's going to develop over the next 3 days. So I'll leave Leicester at 8-11 for now. I think I will back them, though, if they sort of come out of that Napoli game okay. For now, Harvey Barnes, each way, 13-2, first goal scorer, looked lively, I thought, against Villa, and is a terrific player when he's fully fit. And hopefully he's now getting back to his best, because I'm not sure he did, after he first come back from injury.
There we go. Final game we're going to be previewing this week, Palace against Everton. And I'm glad that it's me presenting this week and not Bruce, because we've got a question in from Royce on Twitter who said, I've got Palace at 11s for the drop. He backed that last week and thought it was a good price. I mean, Mark, I've been saying how brilliant Palace have been all season, and Royce has chipped in and he's backed them to go down. Who do you agree with?
Royce must be a regular listener as well, because his surname's McCutcheon, and he referenced the fact that there was no relation to Martin, who I'd mentioned a few weeks ago was a bit of a schoolboy crush. So in terms of the 11-1, I think if you look at the league table, you could say definitely yes. because, you know, people are liking the way they're playing, but their points total doesn't really sort of reflect that, does it? What I tend to think, though, is that over a 38-game season, if you just keep playing the way that you are, you eventually get what you deserve in terms of, you know, if you play like a team that's sort of top half-ish. And I'd say that they are probably playing like a top 10 team, you know, in their performances, then, you know, eventually the wins will start to come. So I can understand looking at the table and thinking that 11-1 is just too big on Crystal Palace, who are notoriously sort of seen as a team that's sort of in that bottom third. And, you know, when the season started, most people were suggesting that it was going to be a real season of struggle, weren't they? And they probably haven't got that many more points than what those people would have been anticipating. But I think that they have shown enough to suggest that they'll be okay. And I think that they'll sort of get three more points here. They have only got three wins, which is one fewer than Watford. But they're one of only seven teams in the Premier League with a positive expected goal difference. So, in my opinion, you know, that will eventually come good. Everyone thinks and focuses on Palace attack being the issue. On expected goals, it's actually defensively. They're just being punished for every half mistake at the moment. So, hopefully that will turn. In terms of Everton, they did beat Arsenal. I'm not overly sold on that performance, really. I thought they showed commitment, but it was maybe Everton not being that, Arsenal not being that good. Mina went off injured. You know, Dominic Calvert-Lewin still not sort of fully fit. Benitez has had a bust up with Digne as well. So I thought the Palace were okay, really, to win this game.
There's your Premier League bets rounded off. Let's get some in the EFL with our EFL guru, Dan Childs.
And now we're going to welcome Dan Childs on to talk all things EFL. Are you okay, Childsy?
Yeah, good. Thanks, Mark.
Well, we've already had a question in from Lee on Twitter for you, Dan. It's quite a simple one, really. Are Rotherham going to win League One? And if they aren't, who is?
Well, simple answer, I would say, is yes, Mark. But I mean, I do think it's, you know, it is a tight division. You've got, you know, look at the top four at the moment. The top three teams, including Rotherham, all on 41 points. You've got Rotherham, Wigan and Wickham all on 41. And then Sunderland, just 2 points further back on 39. The reason I think Rotherham will win it, I mean, they had a bit of a shaky start, actually. Lost three of the first seven games, but they've really got going now. Unbeaten in the last 13 league games. And watching some of their results, I mean, they've hammered Sunderland 5-1, Portsmouth 4-1. They won 5-1 at home to Gillingham in the week. It just doesn't seem to be. It's one of them squads where there don't seem to be any weaknesses for me. You've got Michael Smith banging in the goals, 11 goals this season. Chidozie Ogbeni, you know, got loads of pace and penetration out wide. Already an important player for Ireland at international level, right through the squad. You've got the two of the defensive war horses there, Michael Ihiekwe and Richard Wood, who were part of the team that went up, got that foundation from the team that went up 2 years ago as well, the continuity. So right through the team, really, really strong. I think, you know, if anyone's going to threaten them, probably most likely be Wigan. You know, I've got the two games in hand at the moment, but I think the losing Charlie White to that heart problem was such a huge blow. I think Sunderland, you know, similarly, they've lost a big player in McGeady being injured long-term. And Wickham, I think, you know, maybe they won't just score enough goals. So, yeah, a close race, but Rotherham for me.
OK, and then in terms of this weekend, can you just go through your best bets for us?
Yeah, we'll stick with League One first. I mean, this is a game, you know, right near the foot of the table. Fleetwood, who are fourth from bottom at home, to Gillingham, who are third from bottom. Although they're close in the table, I think this is going to be a comfortable win for the home side, Fleetwood. They've had Stephen Craney's come in as caretaker manager. He's made a nice positive impact. He promoted from his role as the academy coach, and he's getting a good response from a squad of players. There's a lot of youngsters in there, players that he will have worked with as well. You've got Jed Garner, who's come through at the club, the striker, got seven goals this season. Callum Morton hasn't come through the academy, but is a young player on loan from West Brom. He looks a real live wire as well. They played well in a 3-0 win at home to Bolton on Tuesday. And I think they'll follow that up here with another win. Gillingham are just going through an absolutely awful time at the moment. Steve Evans has operated with a small squad, and it's really coming back to bite them with all the injuries that they've got piling up there. They lost 5-1 at Rotherham on Tuesday. The shot count in that game, they actually took the lead in the first couple of minutes, but that was the only shot they had. They lost the shot count 29-1. They only have 4 subs in that game. They lost 3 more during the game. Ryan Jackson to a red card and injuries to Max Aimer and John Akinde. So they are really absolutely down to the bare bones. Don't see them getting anything at Fleetwood.
As I saw the Ducks stop play at that Fleetwood v Bolton game.
It did. It was hammering down a rain. It looked quite good conditions for the Duck, actually. Yeah.
Okay. And then any other bets for us?
Two in League Two. We'll start off with Bradford at home to Sutton United. Now, a lot of people look at this and think Bradford, well, you know, under Derek Adams, they're kind of underperforming a little bit at the moment. Well, a lot, to be honest. They're expected to be pushing for automatic promotion. They're kind of middle of the table, drawing too many games, 10 draws out of their 20 matches. They need to convert some of them draws into wins, but this is a great chance to do that. I mean, they've got at home to a Sutton team that, you know, done great since they came out from the National League, but right now they're kind of struggling a little bit on the injury front. They had two centre-backs were missing for the 3-2 loss at Newport on Tuesday. Kobe Rowe and Louis John were both missing. That meant they played Craig Eastman, a midfielder in a defence, but he got sent off. He's a big player for them as well. He was sent off during the game. They went on. They were leading 2-0 in that game at Newport, went on to lose 3-2. So it was a bit of a tough game for them to take, kind of mentally and physically, really. You know, you wonder how much they're going to have left in the legs for the weekend. And I just think Bradford will be a bit too much for them.
Okay. Well, anything else? Or are we sticking with the two?
The final one, I'll stick with Newport. I mean, going on for that game, Newport are, you know, looking to follow up that win at home to Sutton, at home to Port Vale this weekend. Now, it looks a tough game on paper, Port Vale near the top, but I think Newport can get a win here. Port Vale won 2-1 at Bristol Rovers on Tuesday. But that they made kind of hard work of that, really. Bristol Rovers got a bit of a checkered disciplinary record under Joe Barton this season. They had 2 players sent off in the game, including one in the 15th minute and one in the 77th minute. So Port Vale, you know, really should have been an easy task for them, but ended up sort of scraping a 2-1 win. I think they'll have a much tougher task against Newport, who have got they won that game against Sutton without Dom Telford, who's been banging in the goals, 13 goals in 12 games. He's been off with COVID, but James Robery, the Newport manager, does expect him to be back for this game. So that's a huge boost for Newport, and I think it could make a difference. I think they'll beat Port Vale, who actually, they're struggling a bit up front, got a lot of injuries. Devante Redmond, Jamie Proctor, James Wilson and David Amu, 4 attackers, all injured for Port Vale. So Newport to win that one.
Thanks, Dan.
Always good to have Dan Childs on the show. Mark, let's get some quick fire bets from yourself. Of course, your player prop shop last week landed a 12-1 shot. So no pressure this week.
I'm in 11-1 this time. Joel Matip to score for Liverpool, hopefully, in their game against Aston Villa. Villa have conceded 7 goals from set pieces, so among the worst in the division. And Liverpool scored the most from set pieces, 8. I'm sure that's got a lot to do with the delivery of Trent Alexander-Arnold. And Matip, he's double the price of Van Dijk. They've had the same shots per game sort of record, and he's actually got a better XG. Van Dijk's around about 11-2. Matip is 11-1. So I think you let the price dictate your bet.
Let's hope Matip makes it 2 in a row. What's your long shot?
This was a sickener last week with Lens conceding an equaliser in 90+2 against Paris Saint-Germain. But it gave us a good run for our money. At a similar price this week, I've got Rayo 4-1 away to Villarreal in La Liga. Now, Villarreal's plans are up in the air at the moment because they were meant to be playing on Wednesday. They've had to stay over in Italy, play the Champions League game on Thursday. And I think if you know that you're playing Thursday, Sunday, you can sort of set your training up for the whole week, can't you, to sort of counter that. Unai Emre and his staff will have been thinking on their feet now of to how they sort of go about, you know, planning for this game against Rayo. I think little things like that, I think, can make a big difference in elite sport. And Rayo are a dangerous team anyway. They've already won 8 times in La Liga. That's the same as Atletico. 2 more than Barcelona and 5 more times than Villarreal. So at 4-1, I think they're of interest.
Treble up next. And I don't think we've actually mentioned it so far, Mark, but that landed last week as well. I mean, you were on fire last week.
Yeah, there was some. I mean, I've moaned about some sort of late goals going against me. There was some late help, it has to be said, for the treble, but it swings and roundabouts, and you always need a bit of help. This week, Borussia Dortmund to beat Bochum. If you have a look at when Erling Haaland is in the Dortmund starting 11, they've played 7 times in the Bundesliga. They've scored 22 goals in those 7 games. So when he plays, I'm comfortable enough back in Dortmund against most teams other than Bayern Munich. In the Championship, Fulham to win at Luton. A shade of odds on for Fulham, and I think that is fair enough. They haven't won in their last 3, but they've had 54 shots in those 3 games. So, if you carry on playing like that, I'm sure that they'll get back to winning ways soon. And then finally, Manchester United against Norwich. I think there's a big difference between the two teams already, and I can only see that growing with Manchester United having, somebody, let's be kind and say more experienced in the dugout.
Yep, sounds strong. What's your strongest bet of the week?
So it's in France on Sunday at noon. It's Lille draw no bet at 4-5 against Lyon. Points wise, they're having similar seasons, 24 for Lille, 23 for Lyon. But there's big difference in the underlying data. So in terms of the goal difference, Lyon are at 0.04 expected, and Lille are 0.44. So, a significant, you would say, difference between the two teams, I think. And then I'm not mad on expected points. I think that that's a little bit confusing. But on that, Lille would have 10 more points than Lyon this season. And also I'd look at 538 sort of predict match predictions and projections for the season and this game. They've got Lille in for more points than Lyon. They've actually got them at a 49% chance of winning this game. I'm not sure I'd be quite as high as that, but I definitely think we're painting a picture here where Lille are absolutely at the very, very worst as good as Lyon and probably a bit better. And that means I think 4-5 drawn a bet at home is worth taking.
Excellent. I hope all the listeners have wrote them down. Time for some Twitter questions. Always a fun part of the show, this, and thanks for all of your questions. It feels like a bumper episode this week. I'm going to start with Daniel, Mark. Daniel asked, Brighton, Palace, Leeds, Southampton, Burnley and Newcastle have all drawn at least 7 games this season, equating to 45%. Small sample size, but value to be had in backing the draws. Maybe I'm just... because it's sort of recency bias, Mark, but it feels as if you have been putting up a lot of draws this season, and Daniel's question kind of backs that up.
I'm not adverse to being on a draw. I do think it's a small sample size, but there probably isn't a great deal between a number of them Premier League teams, it has to be said. And so I'm sure it will come down at some stage, but I can't put anyone off betting the draws. Daniel did have a supplementary question as well on how do bookmakers price up the draw. I'm hoping to get an odds compiler on next week's show to discuss that and also sort of how to rate teams and stuff like that. So one to watch out for.
Excellent. Looking forward to that. Mick says, does the fixture congestion over Christmas change your betting? Do you look for decent goal scorer odds for players who usually warm the bench as an example?
I think it massively impacts the betting. Yeah, there's a couple of things. First of all, extra rest, really important. I think it's really unfair that some teams would maybe have an extra couple of days rest over such an important period. So I think that I would target those teams that are maybe a bit fatigued. I'm not sure that it is factored enough into the market. I also think that some managers, if you've got, let's say you've got Man City away over Christmas, but you've got Newcastle at home a couple of days later, I do wonder there about, where the focus is. And particularly in the second half, if the game's gone, do you just give it up? So in play, I think there are angles there. Definitely, you can't really put a rating on that. It's a feel factor kind of thing. But in my opinion, there's something in that. And then in terms of scorers, it's all about the team news, probably more than ever, really. For most Saturdays, you could work out a Premier League starting 11. But over Christmas, it is definitely more chaotic. And there are, you know, if you get fastest finger first, you've got to be quick. But yeah, an hour before, you know, be all over the team news. I think it's a really important time of the year.
Can you still get your, you know, adequate prep in over Christmas, Mark? Or are you too busy sort of eating turkey and wrapping Christmas presents?
It's not the Christmas per se. It's actually just the sheer amount of games that even, you know, if it was, I find it difficult when there are midweek rounds of games to get all the data and all the information in. Is quite difficult. So when you throw in maybe three games or whatever it is bonkers. I do find it tough, no doubt about that. Unfortunately for the family, it's not me necessarily putting them first. It's just the sheer amount of games.
There we go. Derek, when did XG shot data become such a big part of football? And what did Mark use before that data was available?
Oh, yeah. So I think in terms of XG, I'm sort of thinking about 10 years ago, maybe. It was sort of first being spoken about in betting sort of parlance. Hard to remember exactly when it was because time, you know, does fly. But before that, it was sort of shots, possession, corners. You're just looking to build a picture of a game. And next year is just one part of that, that sort of just tells you more than the actual result. Because, you know, football is a low scoring sport. There are always a certain amount of randomness to results every weekend. You know, you could pick out, you just look at one league, there will be a random result that probably doesn't make much sense. So you're just looking to build, like I say, build a picture of what that happened in that game outside of the score, and also to then build that data up over time. You know, are this team dominant over a 6-8 game period that's maybe not showing in results? Before that, I mean, it was, you know, before sort of shots and possession and corners were sort of readily available, it was good old results, really. But I wasn't, you're not looking for teams that have won 8 matches in a row. I was looking for teams that maybe had excuses for bad runs. Was that because they'd had a hard sort of schedule? Was the star striker out? You know, was the goalkeeper missing? You know, those type of things where are not being factored in enough for why a team has lost 4 in a row. And you, and on the other side of that, if somebody's won 6-7 in a row, you know, you're looking for reasons for why that's about to end. So that's how I used to do it before sort of the data came in.
Would you say that the accessibility and the increase in data has directly translated into the success you've had with your betting?
No, I think it's actually made it harder because it's, as you just mentioned there, it's freely available. I think there was a time when I'm not sure that sort of the bookmakers were pricing up the sort of all of this data correctly, but now with that, and you know, with sort of scraping systems to get starting prices, and it actually, if anything, I think it's probably harder now. And I do know people that are kind of turned off a little bit now by expected goals and some of the other data, and just think that it's actually too much influence in the markets, and that if you can find other ways of sort of analyzing teams, that gives you a better advantage. I mean, I haven't found them yet, so I'm sticking to the data.
Yeah, I suppose you're almost looking for the information that isn't readily available, aren't you?
Yeah, you are. Yeah. I mean, but it's about building. Sorry to go over our ground, but you're just building up, sort of gathering as much information about teams as you can. I think that's what you need to do. And, you know, that's injuries, that's stats, underlying stats. You know, it's a lot of things.
Absolutely. Mark, I'm jumping about the running order here, so apologies if I'm confusing you, but I like this one from Simon. Simon asks, do you ever back the bookie specials like enhanced, trebles or turbo boost prices?
No, I don't. And I think you only should do that if you think they're value. I don't like the idea of sort of bookmakers almost selecting your bets for you, you know. I would go into it with a clear mind of what I wanted to back. And if it was those 4 teams and you're able to get on, then great. If it's not, then, you know, I would be wary of them.
Yeah. OK, good stuff. CJ, when did both teams to score start getting popular? And how many years has it been a thing that you can bet on?
So I spoke to Alan Alger, who works for Betway, because I remember him saying on Twitter some time ago that he was involved in sort of initial conversations about, you know, putting it on when he worked for Sporting Odds, about putting it on their coupons. When I spoke to him, he said that was back in 2002. People then got in touch with him on Twitter and said, well, you know, you guys weren't the first. Eurobet were doing it before then. So I think it was around about, yeah, I think we can say around about sort of 20 years ago is probably, the starting point for it. I think it became really popular when Betfred when both teams score, it's goals galore, that sort of coupon. It was everywhere in retail, and they completely messed up their prices. I don't think anyone sort of, as much as sort of, you know, people want to crow about when they're on the right side of this sort of history and coming up with clever stuff, I don't think anyone at Betfred wants to put their name to this one, because they priced up all the games the same. Punters had a field day for a long time, but it really helped to grow the market. And maybe as the years have gone on and they've tweaked their price, and maybe they've got it back now. But those were the glory days when you used to be able to back Peterborough and Crewe and teams like that at 10 to 11 to score both teams.
It's amazing, isn't it, when you've got them sort of niche teams from years gone by that have just favoured sort of, you well.
Yeah, Darren Ferguson, first time around. Thank you, Darren.
One final question from the crowd, then I'm going to have a little one at the end as well. Art Vanderly says, should you ever have a bet on draw no bet? If you think a team might not win, isn't it better just to leave the game alone?
No. I blimey, if I cut out all my draw no bets, I'd probably hardly have a bet. I really like draw no bet. I think the better way to bet. I'd much rather back a team at 4-5 draw no bet than say 7-5 to win the game. I think protecting losses is a good way to go. You know, the draw's a big runner. If you back a team to win at that kind of price, you already, well, whenever you back a team to win, you're behind at the start, aren't you, and need something to happen. At least with draw no bet, you're not in that position. Football's a low scoring sport. Fine margins often dictate results. I don't see that as being the right way to go. It's not necessarily about that thing of if you think a team might not win. I mean, you know, it's about the sort of I suppose with Lille and Lyon that this week, we sort of focus on that one. You know, the draw is a decent sized runner. So I'd much rather sort of get my money back if it ends in a draw. And I would turn it on its head, say you only lose if your bet loses. And protecting your losses, I think, is important for punters, because, you know, if we'd be realistic, you know, you've only got to look at bookmaker profits to realise how many punters actually lose over time. So, protecting those losses and making that as small as possible, I think, is for the best.
I feel like if you were going to be a manager, Mark, you'd be like a Chris Hughton. If you can't win, just don't lose.
Because I'd be more Grand Potter.
Has that offended you slightly?
I'd be more Grand Potter in process is the way to go.
Okay. Final one for me.
Right, and the rest of the drama itself.
I'd watch Graham Potter football. I wouldn't put myself through Chris Hughton football again. So well defended there. We've got midweek Premier League action coming up, so you're going to be very busy. Of course, we'll be releasing next week's bet clubs after this round of fixtures. So have you got a midweek fancy for me?
Yeah, I'm going to oppose Brighton against Wolves. I'm
going against yourself. You just said you were Potter.
Yeah, I know. But I also, if you mentioned earlier on, Jack, I said about Brighton's problems at the moment. So I'm assuming the game against Spurs is called off. I think that means that Duffy will therefore still be suspended. They were going to be missing Dunk and Webster for the game against Spurs, and Lallana and Trossard. And Wolves, I've got some issues with Wolves in terms of creating chances, but they're not an easy team to put away, as Liverpool found out last week. So if you can get sort of Wolves or draw a double chance, that would be the way I'd look to go.
Excellent. Mark, a pleasure as always. Brilliant to be back. And I hope that you've all enjoyed. As I always say, Mark puts up a lot of selections during these podcasts. Please don't feel the need to back them all. Pick wisely and only ever bet with money that you can afford to lose. We'll be back next week for another episode. Enjoy the football. Stay well, and we'll see you all again very soon. Bye-bye.